Welcome to Unbooking the Territory Season 2, where we look at the beginnings and ends, the firsts and lasts, the alphas and omegas of professional wrestling. One half of your hosting duo, Dan Griffin, joined as ever by my partner in podcasting, piss header UTT, Rob. Rob, how are you, mate?
Oh, I'm doing good, mate. I'm doing good. We were just discussing off air about how fantasy football was ruining our lives, but aside from that, it's all good. Imagine real football's ruining my life as well with Darren Moore, or Darren Draw, as they should be called.
But draws are better than losing.
It was so much better when he wasn't at the club.
Really? Is it that bad?
Well, I mean, you know, he replaced club legend Neil Warnock, so it was never going to be onto an easy thing. But yeah,
it's like when Alex Ferguson left Man United. You never wanted to be the person who replaced Alex Ferguson. You wanted to be the person after the person that replaced Ferguson, and then the person after that, and the person after that, and the person after that, and the person after that.
Well, there'll probably be a long lead time between recording this episode and when it goes out. But I will be disgusted if Darren Moore's still our manager by the time this episode drops.
It's a shame as well, because I thought Darren Moore back in the day was dealt a pretty rough hand by West Brom when they let him go, and then when he got Sheffield Wednesday promoted, and then they parted ways. But sometimes it just doesn't work out. I hope he turns it around for you. I really do.
Well, fingers crossed. Yeah, that's... Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if he doesn't.
Well, you know, you can only work with what you've got, and what you've got isn't a lot.
Fair enough.
Unnecessary dig at Huddersfield.
It's driving me to drink, Dan, that's what's happening.
It doesn't fucking take much. So what are you on, buddy?
Right, so as we are covering the last episode of Wrestler, I have once again got a Welsh beer that I'd saved for the occasion. It's a Dolphin by Magic Dragon Brewery. It's a New Zealand hopped IPA at 4.5%. It's pretty decent. I think I've given it a 3 out of 5 on Untappd.
Good stuff. For the third recording in a row, I'm on that limited edition Verdant, the alternative currency at 5.8% East India Porter. It's still very nice. And coming up after that, I've got a Wiper and True Espresso Martini Shake Coffee Stout at 5.6%. Now, I like a bit of Wiper and True, so I've got high hopes for that. I may end up getting another one as well, but we'll see how long this takes.
So that one sounds very familiar. I think I've had that one, and I think it's good. I mean, Wiper and True are a decent brewery anyway. Got high hopes for you on that one.
Yeah, I've definitely had the regular version, but I'm sticking to my dark beers because 'tis the season as we're recording this in winter and around Christmas. But as you mentioned there, Rob, we're going back to Wrestler, and it's the last episode of the last run of Wrestler. So very excited to get to that, because we've enjoyed every trip we've taken to Wales so far, haven't we?
We have indeed, yeah. We've had a lot of fun with that. After I finished this Magic Dragon beer, I've got a Corrado Velodas, which is a...
Corrado?
Corrado.
Oh, sorry.
It's a shame. Well, there's a pig on the front that does look a bit Corrado-y, to be fair.
Poor Corrado.
Oh, I like Corrado. Corrado's all right. That's 6% pale ale from the Barcelona Beer Company.
Oh, very nice.
And then after that, I have Jakobsland Brews Think Reality, which is a porter at 5.4%. So, yeah, quite fancy a porter this evening.
Very good stuff. We're both steady away.
Yeah. Yeah, well, we're responsible in our being irresponsibleness.
I'm mostly taking it easy because at time of recording, Last week, I may have overindulged in the free beer at my staff Christmas do and drank like I was in my 20s when I'm very much not. And I know you say you don't believe in hangovers, Rob, but honest to God, the way I felt last week would have made a believer out of you.
Ouch. That doesn't sound good. In all fairness, I don't believe in hangovers, but I don't drink like I used to. Although, to be fair, it was John Smith's that I'd got in a 4-pint jug that had gone stale.
Oh, dear me.
Oh, no, we used to be able to get a 4-pint jug of John Smith's for £5. And it never occurred to us that four of us should share. We were sat on the table with four of us with a jug each.
Hang on, a 4-pint jug of John Smith's?
Yeah.
Do you mean a Matt Butler breakfast?
Oh, no, this were proper Smith's. This were the cask stuff, not the electric crap.
Oh, fair enough. So what you're telling me is you wouldn't recommend sitting there with a 4-pint jug of any form of John Smith's?
Well, if it were cask, but it's difficult to find cask these days, isn't it?
Yeah, that's true. So there's caveats to that. But as far as recommendations go, what would you recommend that people watch this last episode of Wrestler with?
Well, as this is the last episode and, you know, it's all going to fade to black, and one that would actually be a good beer to drink while you're listening to the Doctor Who pod. Mm-hmm. It's a Welsh beer, Tiny Rebel. It's a Radler, and it's called The Silence.
Ooh, very nice.
Yeah, and it's one that I've given 4 out of 5 to an Untapped.
Good stuff. I'll keep my eye out for it. For myself, I've not gone with a Welsh beer. I'm sticking in Yorkshire, and it's one I tried very recently. I tried it on draft, and it's Kirkstall Creek. That's K-R-I-E-K. It's a 3.4% fruit beer, and I'll be honest, it tastes like Cherryade. It is absolutely delicious.
It's very nice. I was in a Kirkstall pub last Friday, actually, when we weren't recording, and that's a freak. Yeah, it's nice.
It's gorgeous. I gave it 4.5. I'm going to say 4.5%. I gave it 4.5 out of 5 on Untapped. It is very, very nice, and just goes to show that you don't need massive alcohol content in your beer to make it tasty.
No, exactly. Well, I've just recommended a Radler, so.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. That has got to be the first time we've both recommended beers under 4%.
Yes, yeah. It's almost like we colluded on this, but we haven't.
Anybody who knows us knows that one of us definitely doesn't have that level of forethought.
Yeah, and, you know, to be fair, I mean, there's been times when we've recommended, both recommended above 10% beers, so, you know, it's just the range that we enjoy, Dan.
Balance in the universe.
Exactly.
Yeah. So going into this last episode of Wrestler, I couldn't find too much on the background. I believe this is from the CWA International Catch Cup from the 24th of November 1995 and is from the Stadthalle in Bremen again. But I couldn't find any attendance figures or anything like that. And it looks quite obviously like they've been put into a side room.
This was filmed in Delwyn in North Wales. So,
oh, Cage Match lied to me.
So they may well have faced each other in Germany as well, but I think this is something separate.
Yeah, and if you know, if Kojima's touring over here at the time, if he was in the CWA International Catch Cup, then it follows that he may have been touring all across Europe. So yeah, I'll bow to your superior research on that one, Rob. Like I say, I was trolling through Cage Match trying to find an equivalent, and that's what it threw up. But it does very much look much more working men clubsy.
Delwyn is in North Wales. It's kind of relatively close to the Wirral.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah, so it's that sort of area of the world. And the thing that sort of cements it for me is that one of the turnbuckle pads was sponsored by Delin Deliveries, which is like a company in that region. So I think it's nailed on to be there in a working men's club.
See, I remember seeing that on the turnbuckle and didn't think to, it just didn't register that one, it was in English, and two, I didn't think to Google the company name.
Would hate to play a hate to game.
Let me tell you something, Cole. You better booker it better.
And that noise right there means it's time for Steve-O to booker it better.
Oh, fucking hell.
Well, let me tell you something about Booker T Deliveries, proud sponsors of the Fit Finley versus Kajimi contest. And let me tell you something about Booker T Deliveries. Why is it so special? Why should you come to Booker T Deliveries? Well, let me tell you something. I will personally come, and when I deliver that package, I will give you a spinner Rooney. Now, can you dig that? Make sure to call me on Booker T Deliveries on 555.
So he put a lot of emphasis on the word come.
Oh, well, that's not the way I was going with that. I was going to say, do you have any packages that need moving? But I didn't mean back and forth rapidly.
Either way, there'd be plenty of adhesive knocking around.
Interesting.
Yeah, yeah, I'd more of a packing penis than packing peanuts.
Well, moving swiftly on. Thank you for that, Steve.
You, oh, the delivery service would be called You Penis. puts the D in DPD. FedEx. I think I'm done.
Yeah. Well, that's what Steve all said.
No, Booker T.
Booker T, yeah. Oh, my goodness. There we go. So, Kojima versus Fit Finlay.
Yes, shit, we're here to talk about wrestling, aren't we? Yeah, the episode opens with Orig Williams on the ring apron, resplendent as ever with his, just with his general presence. Don't understand a word he's saying, and we cut to the ring, and Fit Finlay comes out in his full 1995 mullet and tash glory.
So one of the things I noticed about this was that people were sat at tables at ringside. So I don't know if this is dinner on a show. It was very reminiscent of that episode of All Star Wrestling that we watched from the Hippodrome, you know, the disco
ladder match.
Yeah. And also, it's like those shots that they went to from the AWA Team Series Challenge. So were they going to this working men's club in Wales during the AWA Team Series Challenge?
It was a bit weird, wasn't it? But Finlay comes out, he's looking lean and mean and all that. And I just, because Kojima's still going, and the leader of the bread club is very much a freshly baked loaf at this point.
Leader of the Bread of Heaven Club.
Oh, is that what it's called now?
No, it's Bread of Heaven is the National Anthem of Wales.
Well, I didn't fucking know that.
We've been doing four Welsh specials back to back. We played it at the end of the episode Tolly was on with us.
How many months ago was that?
A long, long time ago.
I can't remember what happened last week.
Yeah.
Granted, that was alcohol intake at the aforementioned staff Christmas do, but still. Killed a lot of brain cells, Rob.
Well, I need to drink more Tiny Rebel and Magic Dragon and whatever we've been drinking, Rob.
I do need to drink more Tiny Rebel. That is very true. I meant to get their Stay Puffed Holiday Collection this year and completely forgotten. Now I'm sad.
Yeah. During these Welsh episodes, I've drunk a lot of Meridian's Brewery and I don't need to drink any more of that.
The Welsh wrestling gods giveth and taketh away.
Indeed they do.
Yeah. But yeah, like I said, they come out, it looks a bit, little bit like sort of man against boy, because Finlay's, like I say, all mullet and tash, and Kojima is extremely baby-faced. But Kojima just goes straight in with kicks to the leg that sound like a shotgun going off.
It felt very sort of worked shoot style, this match, didn't it?
It did. So,
yeah, I mean, there's bits early in the match, you know, I always pick out when they go for a judo move, Kojima goes for a judogatami, sort of triangle at lock early on, and there's all these kicks, and it felt more towards the martial arts end of the scale than, you know, the classic sports entertainment wrestling match.
It certainly did in the early going. You know, Kojima was very hot on those kicks, you know, to the rib and to the legs. Finlay was very much trying to sort of pick a leg and grab a hold, but Kojima was always able to break. Kojima was trying palm strikes, and it didn't quite work, so he went back to the midsection. But I quite like that kind of style. This, when people say that wrestling should feel like a contest, this is sort of what they mean. I think it maybe goes a bit too far in the other direction, like you were saying.
I think the other thing is, bear in mind, you know, that episode of Wrestler that we watched when they returned and they're in Germany, and, you know, they were like, right, we're going to have yellow cards and some more rules in wrestling. There's this one bit early on in the match where Kojima's kicking Finlay in the back. I think he kicks him 10 times and Finlay falls out of the ring. And, you know, he'd kind of been in the ropes at that time, and there's no yellow card. And it felt...
Yeah, they've abandoned it.
Yeah, they've abandoned it, but B, if you're going for more of a sporting presentation, for want of a better term, you know, the old AEW battle cry. But if you're going to do that, then that fits a lot better into your public warnings and yellow cards and adherence to the rules, which can be broken by the heels, and, you know, you go on from there. And it was just a little bit jarring that we didn't get it.
Yeah, and you are right. That should have garnered some form of punishment rather than a very minor reprimand and scattered boos from the crowd. Because that kind of spot is very much the heel breaking the rules. And the crowd have responded, but there's no blowback. You know, if Kojima gets a yellow card, he could be indignant and annoyed and go about things in a potentially different way. Instead, Finlay takes a bit of a breather, and Kojima's back at it with the strikes and the clubbing blows, but then Finlay's just going straight back to trying to get a hold. There's not a lot of reaction from Finlay. He just goes straight back to, I am doing the wrestling and I will defeat you.
Yeah, this felt very much to me like watching jiu-jitsu as opposed to MMA. You know, when I've actually gone to jiu-jitsu tournaments and stuff, it felt like that sort of... There's almost like a pacing to jiu-jitsu that's slower than judo, or I don't know, maybe that's the wrong word. They spend a lot of time trying to grab a hold, a lot of time when, you know, because in judo there's like a standing count and you've got to break it, but, you know, they're just given time to work the hold and be down there. And it felt like they'd really leaned heavily on that, which is interesting given that, like, MMA hasn't really taken off at this point.
It's still very early days, but one thing I did notice in, you say about MMA, it's just sparked in my memory now, because I actually watched this match earlier today just to give a bit of a refresher. In the introduction to the show and the ring introductions, I picked up on the word pancreas.
Right, yeah.
So, obviously, we're going into this without the context of the matches given by Orig Williams or by the announcer. But hearing pancreas makes me wonder if that was intentional.
Yeah, well, I definitely think it was. But within all these jiu-jitsu things, you end up with a scene where Finlay's accidentally sat on Kojima's face. And I just love a George Takei meme to have swept on the screen with it.
Yeah, no, I get what you mean. It's like, and like, I think it's fair to say that it did lean a bit too far into the martial arts side of things, because reading through a lot of my notes and watching it today, it's very much Finlay goes for hold, Kojima gets out, strikes, Finlay goes for the hold again, Kojima might reverse it or might just smack the shit out of him. But one thing that did confuse me in this match was, it seemed to be a bit inconsistent in the rope breaks. It's a point where Finlay, I think he catches a kick from Kojima, drops him into a knee bar, and the referee ignores the rope break.
You see,
then a second later, Kojima's in a hold. I think he's in an STF from Finlay, and he sort of slithers around and gets the rope break.
Yeah.
So why did that count? And not the other one? Or is it like in true Brits, pure Brit rules, where they only get a certain amount of rope breaks?
Yeah, it seemed a bit weird, didn't it?
Yeah.
I didn't catch who the referee was here. To be fair, I wasn't really paying attention to that, and it's only just come to mind now. But in the match in Germany, wasn't the referee, I think it's, is it Frank Finlay, who was Dave Finlay's brother?
Yes.
Something like that. It might not be Frank, I might have got the wrong name there. But I have seen a lot of him recently as I've been doing my rewatch of Screen Sports Satellite Wrestling from 1986, you know, for wrestling based in Stoke. Mm-hmm. But he has a lot of times when he's not enforcing the rules, and, you know, the refereeing in this felt very him.
Yeah, I get what you mean. It'll come as a surprise to know what I didn't clock who the ref was in this.
No. I just wouldn't be surprised if it was him, knowing what we know from the last wrestler we watched and the other stuff, yeah.
Yeah, so that didn't help the match. But I will say that Finlay, at this point, clapped on a miles better STF than Cena, which doesn't say much, but...
Well, that's interesting as well, though, because, you know, we've seen how much of an influence Lou Fez has had on Japan, that Finlay's the one doing the STF.
Yeah, but I think this match was more from the point of that Finlay can do that because he's the veteran, and Kojima's very much sort of young lion on excursion at this point, I think, in his career.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, definitely.
Which you can see by when I use the phrase limited moveset, it's not a derogatory term. It's just how young lions in New Japan are brought through. You know, they get given black trunks, black knee pads, black elbow pads. They get given a few moves they can do, and they get told to, right, this is your arsenal, go out there and get over.
Yeah.
Figure it out, you know, use that and figure out a way to connect with the crowd. But yeah, this being sort of the striker versus the grappler, I can kind of see what they were going for.
Yeah.
And some of the strikes from Kojima and from Finlay, to be fair, were strong.
Yeah, definitely.
We're very strong. I mean, I say this as somebody who's a big fan of the Bloodsport shows that GCW puts on every year. I enjoyed this, and I don't think this would look out of place on one of those shows, apart from the refereeing, really.
Yeah.
But again, I wonder if we had the full understanding of the commentary, if maybe that would have filled in a blank or two for us.
Yeah, it possibly would. I mean, there's a couple of times within that sequence and, you know, the grabbing the rope and then, you know, pulling it back into the centre of the ring, going back to the rope. And there's just no yellow card, which, you know, I thought this was the way that wrestler was going off after the reboot.
Yeah. And that's the thing. If we did have that yellow card, if we had that visual representation that somebody had done something wrong, then non-Welsh-speaking folks, such as ourselves, would have been given a clip.
To be fair, they could have given a public warning that we've just missed. Not understanding.
Well, but
I don't think there was ever a point where, you know, we're getting the ring announcer, you know, interjecting.
Yeah, I don't think there is as well. So I'm just trying to think back over the audio, and you know, we're spending a lot of time on what sort of the refereeing and the rules do wrong. There's still a lot right in the match. Like I say, it's hard hitting. Finlay's going for the grappling, which is, you know, for him being who he is exceptional. And if you are a fan of that more sort of technical aspect of things, or you just want the ground and pound, but we'll put it this way, if you're a Gunter fan, you'll like a lot of this match.
Yes, yeah.
I think that's the nicest way I could, that's the sort of most currently relevant way I can put it.
And the thing is, though, it's like putting the match in context, that in isolation, if you drop this match into WWE today, then, and, you know, and held up against a Gunther match, then it looks quite good. It's just that we'd had this reboot and they'd established it as a very rules-based promotion. And okay, this is a couple of years on, so a lot could have happened within that time. But it's jarring that we get this sports presentation without, you know, the officiating that we saw last time.
Yeah. No, that's true. I completely get where you're coming from. I'm just kind of trying to take it on its own merit as it's presented to me. I don't know what's gone on or not gone on in the intervening time. So I'm just going to take this match for what it is, which is fairly poorly refereed, but also my style of hard bastardry.
It's funny, though, that poorly refereed, because, you know, I mean, on Tankatory, we covered the whole WCW period where we're going to open things up and rules are going to be a lot more lax and people are going to get away with a lot more stuff.
Mm.
And in that universe, then it makes sense that people are doing the things that they're doing that they couldn't have done last week, and there could have been a conversation in Wrestler for all we know.
True. Yeah. Maybe, yeah. I've maybe gone a bit too far calling it poorly refereed and effectively nullified my own argument, saying I was taking it for what it was. Hey, at least I'm willing to admit my mistakes and own them.
Well,
sorry, I was just taking my first sip of the Wiper and True Espresso Martini Shake Stout. That is fucking delicious. Oh, it is very intense on the coffee.
I've just poured out the Jacobs and Brews Think Reality. Chris Bellis will be really happy to know that it holds its head well. A good third of my pint glass is head, and I can't get through to the beer at the moment, so I'm going to have to wait.
Bit lively.
Yes, it is very lively. And that was a
tilted crap.
No, that was a slow pour from a tilted glass, but yeah, the head's just not moving. But, yeah.
Oh dear.
Oh well, Chris would like that. He's a he likes his head.
Don't we all?
What does everybody want?
I'll snow.
Mm.
Yeah. So. This match isn't very long. It's about 10 minutes, so we're not going to sort of break it down hold for hold, spot for spot. I think we've summed it up saying, you know, it's a bit strikey-strikey, grapply-grapply to adapt a phrase from Nitro Nights. One thing that sort of really got me towards the end, though, was when Kojima rolled to his knees out of the armbar and was just trying to forearm Finlay in the head, who had the guard up. But Kojima was just raining down the blows and just trying to get through. And I thought that was a really good visual as the ref was counting the 10.
Yeah, I guess this is before that point, but it did feel that sort of strong style-esque, what we've come to expect from Japanese wrestling in 2023.
As well
as having a bit more of the Pancrase style to it.
Yeah, I'd say that's accurate. And we get the finish that's coming in the both. You get the knees from Kojima, and one connects with Finley's face, who then catches a kick, gets it into a dragon screw, and grabs a submission that I have never seen before, that's somehow wrenching both knees. I can't remember the exact hold, but I lack the language skills to explain it, and I don't know what the hold's called.
What I've put is weird foot under armpit, arm round one knee, and other foot trapped behind the back of his knee move.
That.
Yeah.
It's that. And it looked painful.
Yeah. Well, it was a new one on me.
It looked nasty, looked painful, but Finlay refused to break the hold for so long that the referee disqualified him.
Yes, yeah.
Which, for me, was a bit disappointing, because up until then, this match had been my shit. You know, I was enjoying it, and sort of to end in the disqualification, knowing that I'm not going to see a rematch or a resolution to it, was it just left me a bit deflated.
This didn't feel like they knew this was going to be the end, and I don't think Wrestler did. I've been looking in some of the, you know, getting myself back again on the British newspaper archive. Wrestler would trying to go for another TV deal after this, so I don't think they thought it was the end by any stretch of the imagination. It's weird, though, because they had seasons, effectively, like Lucha Underground, but they didn't do anything to, you know, I don't know, like build up to a big event or whatever, and it does feel a little bit weird that it kind of ends here, because, like we said with the first time that Wrestler got cancelled, didn't feel at all like they had any idea that cancellation was coming.
Yeah.
Which they probably didn't. And it doesn't sort of, you know, set up for the future. It's not sort of any hangers. I don't know if this would, you know, drive people to the shows when the, you know, they've lost the TV deal, but obviously they're still going to want people to go to the shows that they're putting on around Wales.
Mm.
It was a bit weird. It felt, you know, this could have just been an ordinary week's television. effectively.
I was going to say that it felt very much like this is it. We don't know where we're going from here. Just chuck out a match. We've got time to fill. Sorry, I mean that in the way of we might be back next week, we might not. But they can't treat every week as if it's going to be the last week.
No.
So throw out something like this and think, well, hopefully we'll be back next week. But what do we do? There's only so many times you can put out a match that will be the last hurrah.
But to be fair to them, it wasn't a case that they were hoping to be back next week. It was a case that they were hoping to be back next year. Yeah, well, yeah, because it's another season. So,
true, I suppose.
You know, they would run, you know, for X amount of weeks and then have some time off and then, you know, come back next year. So if they're going to run for 30, 40 weeks, whatever it turns out to be, and then have a break and then come back, which isn't the worst idea in the world. It's a shame that wrestling companies don't do that. But, you know, like we had with Lucha Underground, that they built up to the Ultima Luchas and you had a definitive thing that happened. Yes, they've got this opportunity, and, you know, people might scoff at an opportunity in S4C, but you are going for a Welsh language audience. There's only ever going to be so much of the pie that you're going to get.
Yeah. I get what you're saying. They've had the opportunity and they've been neither here nor there with it. They've not known whether to shit or get off the pot.
Yeah, and I mean, it's been interesting that they've brought in, you know, the stuff from Germany and all this sort of stuff. There was probably some cost saving to that because there had been, you know, just the stuff from Germany on Eurosports or whatever. So it was just probably a case of, oh, you know, you do the English language commentary and Orig, you do the Welsh language commentary. And, you know, someone's there doing the French and German commentary and whatever. You know, like you see the big commentary things on WWE pay-per-views today.
Yeah, you do.
But they were probably doing that, you know.
Yeah, they've gone from that sort of international potential, shall we say, and cross-promotion to going out with a bit of a whimper.
Yeah, in a working man's club in Wales sponsored by a delivery company that Booker T works for.
Fucking hell. That's... So when you put it like that and you reduce it down to that, how are we going to rate this any form of highly?
Well... It's funny because if you look at the match, well, we'll come on to that in a minute, but we'll go through.
We will, yeah.
Well, so there weren't any adverts on the show.
Apart from the delivery company.
Yeah, and we've spent an absolute age getting to this one from the last episode. So I think it would probably be unfair to, you know, go through all the shout-outs, you know, that we've had individually. We are really grateful for everyone that's promoted the show, listened to the show, given us any sort of support, you know, and we, you know, we have the regular sort of cast of characters that always shout us out every week, you know, we'll be trawling through months of stuff at this point, but, you know, we deeply appreciate everyone that's ever, you know, taken any time to listen to our stuff and thank everyone very much for that.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Anybody who supports anything that we do, it's always great to hear. And you know, the fact that we get regular shout-outs for everything we do, we couldn't really ask for more.
No.
Really do appreciate it.
Yeah, it is. And, you know, in turn, you know, I try and promote as many people as I can, sort of thing, when I've listened to their shows. So, yeah, everyone supports each other in this little weird community that we've got.
Yeah, we've got a bizarre little corner of the internet, but I love it. It's full of good eggs, and I try and shout people out as well. But my memory is terrible, so I set out with the best of intentions and then completely forget to do it because I'm a knob. But, you know, there we go.
You tried your best and failed. The lesson is never try.
Exactly. Exactly. So with that in mind, shall we go to the awards section?
Yeah, so what are you giving the match of the night to, Dan?
Whoa. It's difficult, you know. There's so much competition. So much competition. I was tempted to give it to the referee versus the rules because there was an obvious conflict there. But I think I'm going to go with Finlay versus Kojima.
Yeah, I'm going to have to go with that as well because it's all we've got. And it's a shame because there's normally two matches on the wrestler shows and this is literally all that's remaining. So, yeah, it's a shame we didn't get the first half of it.
Yeah, it is. If we could track it down, we would, but we can't, so we haven't.
Yeah.
Who would you give your MVP of the night to?
I would probably give it to Finlay. He was the ring general. Yeah, but we saw a lot of good stuff from both of them, but yeah, I'd probably edge it to Finlay.
Yeah, and I've gone exactly the same. It was Finlay. He made Kojima look good. He was obviously the more senior man in the ring. Yeah, he was fantastic. But you could have picked either man, to be fair. But definitely get Finlay for me. A little bit more difficult. What is your moment of the night?
So my moment of the night was Finlay not breaking the hold on the ropes and start being the heel. Although it is interesting from something you said earlier, because you were saying about Kojima doing pretty much the same and that being heel behaviour. Do we actually have a good handle on who was face and who was heel in this match?
No, not at all.
No, I don't think we do. And I think, I don't know if that's playing into the pancreas reality of it.
Yeah.
Or just a bit mixed up.
Yeah, it depends how genuine you want to be, I suppose.
Yeah.
My moment of the night is the first kick from Kojima. I mentioned it before. It sounded like a goddamn gunshot.
I was going to say, it set the tone for the night, didn't it?
Yeah, it really did. It was just brutal, straight out of the gate, bang. The only time I've heard of a kick like that in wrestling was when I got to see Mike Bailey in Trafalgar Warehouse in Sheffield. You know what the acoustics are like in that place? One of Bailey's kicks going off with the kick pads and all that, it sounded like a gun to chop.
Now, that was a fun day. Do you remember what we told... Because Beth got really drunk that day. Do you remember what we told her she'd done?
No.
We told her that she'd upset Vader Scott by standing on the toilet and looking over the thing and...
Oh, yeah. That was that day.
And she believed us.
Oh, that was funny. That was very funny. Oh, God. Was that a collaborative piss take or was that me that came up with it?
Yeah, it was probably you, but I think we all went with it. But
well, why wouldn't we?
I don't know if that was the first day that Cousin Chris had an underage drink as well. It was,
He was there that day, wasn't he? Yeah. Was that the same show where I got rinsed for 3 minutes by Gabriel Kidd?
I think it was. But Cousin Chris, I was at the bar because I was expecting him to want, you know, a Diet Pepsi or something. And I said, yeah. I said, what do you want to drink? And he was about 15 at the time. And he just turns to barman and goes, Strongbow Dark Fruits. And he starts pouring it. And I'm like looking at the two of them. And I'm going, bloody hell, I've been drawn into committing a crime. And then Chris turns around and shouts, Others, what do you want? And I'm like, oh, I'm buying a drink for Others now as well, aren't I?
You can never begrudge Appers a drink, though, can you?
No. I don't mind, but just the whole thing of underage drinking and for everyone in the venue.
Hey, fair play to him, though. What a way to cement it.
Yeah.
No, that was. It's the one time I'll be complimentary to Cousin Chris. Good on him. That was smart thinking. Yeah. Sure, he's not done any of that since.
Yeah, his bounce ended that day. He peaked and burnt too early.
I'm going to stop before I start making more jokes about somebody who's not here to defend himself. There were no signs of the night, as we said before. You were saying about advertisements, but there's no signs either. So we're straight into the hair awards. So who gets your Tori Wilson award for best hair of the night?
Well, I'm going to give it to Kojima because yeah. I am giving Fit Finlay's poodle the René Goulet.
Great minds think alike and idiots agree.
unless we'd vote for Arik.
Or the referee. Mm. Or one of the people in the crowd who you could barely see because of all the footages. But yeah, there really were only two options. Kojima blatantly had the best haircut of the lot, and Finlay certainly had the most eye-catching and unique and slightly terrible.
Definitely. In the Little Chef it was filmed in, or wherever it was.
Little Chef. Can you imagine that? Oh, God. Filming a little chef just off of services.
That's now an absolute superstore.
Yeah, I know. It's, oh, God. But it was still a good match, and I enjoyed it, and we've completed the wrestler journey. We may dip back in as we see fit if we find some hidden gems and or anything like that. But what would you rate this one out of 10, Rob?
It's a weird one. If I rated it in isolation and didn't consider the previous wrestler, I'd probably be like 6, 6.5, that sort of territory. If I'm put into the world that was created in the reset of Wrestler, and, you know, we think about the Chono Tony St. Clair match that we saw on the first episode of The Return, I'd probably rate it a 4 in terms of how well it fits into that reality of the promotion, because this was totally different, you know. This was Pancrase in an ordinary wrestling promotion. There were no rules where there'd been rules before. So it's a weird one, and I've never been as sort of conflicted with the review that we've given. And I think we'd need more context of where the promotion was and how well it fit in for me.
Yeah, I can see that, but I'm in a similar vein, because if I take this as a match on its own merit to my taste, then I'm going to rate it probably 7.
Yeah.
But if I'm going to rate it as a final episode or something, especially after the first, like you say, after the first one, then I'm going to have to knock it down severely and take it down to maybe a 5 or even a 4.
Yeah.
But at the same time, I feel that's a little bit unfair, because so often we take things on, you know, we take things by their own merit of whether it's a good opening episode of something or whether it's a bad opening, you know, a bad ending episode. And I don't know. As a match, it's a 7. As a closing episode, it's not great. So, in fact, as a closing episode, it's probably pretty poor, because whether they knew it or not, it doesn't resolve anything. It doesn't leave a cliffhanger.
I think, to be fair, I'm going to have to go with the lower rating. And the reason, for consistency, I was really hard on that first episode of WWF on ITV.
Yeah.
Because it didn't fit in with the environment it was placed in.
Yeah.
If that makes sense. And
yeah, it does.
If I'm going to hold WWE to that standard, I think I should be holding Wrestler to that standard.
That's where I was going with it as well. I think I have to err towards the lower rating and probably go with the 4.
Yeah.
Which is a shame, because it does the match itself a disservice. But it's only at a 4 because of the match.
Yeah.
Factoring everything else, I mean, the crowd worked great. It didn't look fantastic, you know, in terms of the production values.
This was the lowest production values we've seen in Wrestler. I mean, this, for whatever we say about them not knowing this was the end, we should have been telegraphed that we've gone from sport centres and town halls that were absolutely pumping to a working men's club where people were eating the dinner while it were going on.
Yeah, which is never a great atmosphere, because are you really going to pay 100% attention to a wrestling match going on when you've got food in front of you?
No. Well, it was incidental, wasn't it? I think those people probably would have been there anyway, and the wrestling happened to be on.
It gives
it the HCW vibe.
Yeah. Yeah, the kiss of death.
Yeah.
Yeah. So yeah. It's a very sad end to wrestling. And above all else, the match was good, but the ending was a bit annoying as well.
Yeah. Yeah, weird officiating, weird ending. Great wrestlers. And they tried something. I just don't know if this was the time that should have tried it.
No. Don't think it was. And it's, I've said it a couple of times. It's a shame to see Wrestler go out with a whimper, effectively.
Yeah, it is. So where can people find you, Dan?
Well, you can find me on Twitter at DanGriffin21, usually tweeting about wrestling that's a minimum 6 weeks out of date on movies that are 25 years out of date. If you want to hear more of me talking about stuff, I'm over on SJP World Media on the Doctor Who pod with Cy Powell, talking about Doctor Who, funnily enough, where we look at one episode per Doctor per serial and rank them all at the end on how much we liked them. And I'm also on The Volley with my strike partners, the magnificent Matt Lewis and Connor from Connor Knows Footy, providing alternative commentary for Premier League football matches and beyond. We even branched out into the MLS with the MLS Cup final. and just keep your ear to the ground and see where we go in the future.
Well, if you do an MLS, I hope you can get to do some Portland Timbers where they chop off a bit of wood or a goal.
Yeah, I'd be well up for that. The only thing, we covered the MLS Cup final because Connor's a Columbus Crew fan, and Columbus got to that final and they won it, and it was a great time. Connor went absolutely mental on the broadcast. He was running around his bedroom or wherever he was watching it, just absolutely losing his shit. It was great to see, and just the power of football.
No, it is brilliant. Not, you know, it's really has the power to give you joy or despair. Well,
and we eat pies.
Well, exactly. You know, although I was let down by Halftime Pie Club the other day. Dan,
did you not stick around to see me eat the mince pie?
I saw you eat the mince pie, but it felt like a very last minute pie. It didn't feel like
because it was
pie. Yeah, there was a pub near me. I've only been in once, but they always have a sign outside saying that they have a pudding of the day. And I always wonder if that's, they'd go like steak and kidney, or if it just stays in the sweet puddings.
It turns out it's the pudding of the day. They've just put one on a pedestal.
Yeah, right. Well, I was just some idiot that they call a pudding.
I'm up for the next award.
Yeah, yeah. There you go. So Dan will be appearing at the Flap It. So you can find me at UTT Roberts, reading more about the mutuals than it is about the followers. So I'm absolutely more than happy to follow back. On the same channel that you listen to this, you can hear the One Man's Meat podcast with Danny at Scottish Juggalo and the real Chris Bellis, and they're going through the forgotten storylines of wrestling, wrestlers that might get them much love, that kind of thing. They also had a side series where they were going through every episode of Wrestle Society X and Wrestle Society Extra, which were short, bite-sized episodes, which are really worth checking out.
Yeah, a couple of good guest stars on there as well for the final episode.
Yeah, they didn't know near enough. Mind you, no, I'd absolutely gone to town with my... Yeah, check out my cage match profile for my entire thoughts on Wrestle Society X and Wrestle Society Extra.
It's all right. At least you watched the right show first time round.
Ah, the 6,000 character limit is really depressing me on cage match at the moment.
You wanted to write essays?
Well... Right, the thing about cage matches, it's all really dry. It's like X beat Y. But it doesn't have any of the flavour of, you know, what vignettes were going on, you know. Mm-hmm. Did Mark Rollerball Rocco steal a China dinner set off Mitzi Muller and throw it on Vince Miller's head?
It's all the steak and none of the sizzle.
Exactly. You should have expected it. It was in the potteries. But that's not captured in the...
you know, fuck's sake.
Yeah, for my screen sports satellite wrestling life and reviews. But yeah, you need to get that sort of flavour in, because that's not capturing who beat who. But yeah, it's really worth checking out their stuff. And obviously they've had side projects like Disgusting Awful.
Yeah, Disgusting Awful's fantastic. Incredibly well researched. Chris and Danny put incredible effort in. I will just extol their virtues. No end, especially where horror movies are concerned, because those two guys have a combined knowledge that's, I'm convinced, is unparalleled, and they put it to great use, up to and including getting more interesting information than Netflix documentaries.
Yeah. If you've ever seen, you know, those series like, you know, The Toys That Made Us, etc., it's very much in that vein, but it feels more researched.
Yeah, it really does, and the guy, there's something wonderful when two people are discussing something that they're so knowledgeable and so passionate about, and it really shines through with those guys. It's there in the wrestling, absolutely, because we're all passionate about wrestling in our little corner of the internet. We all do love it, but the horror movie stuff is just so good, and this is part of my agenda for 2024, and I'll be telling Chris this as well, and Danny, that I want more Disgusting Awful in 2024.
Yeah. Get outside the house banging on doors. Start cranking them out.
No, I'm not allowed to do that anymore.
No, it's not since the restraining order.
Yeah, we don't talk about that.
So we've had a couple of side projects ourselves. We're going through every match that Big Daddy and Giant Haystacks have on their road to Wembley 1981, one of the most watched wrestling matches of all time, when 18 million people watched. We're currently in the 1970s and having an absolute ball.
We are. I'm educating myself properly. My first time going through as much as is left of the Daddy in Haystacks, sort of mammoth run up to 1980, having an absolute blast doing it, discovering some new favourites. And yeah, it's one of the most important eras in all of wrestling, and I can't wait to get into more of it.
Yeah, and we don't just stay in the 70s, we do some more modern stuff. And over on Unputting the Territory, we're following the sporting competition that the Being the Elite Championship was contested under. At time of recording, we have just done an episode on flipping a water bottle.
And if you thought it was ridiculous, me getting far too into the logistics and the competition of Gator Golf, wait till you hear me talking about flipping a bottle.
Ooh, he's got the weight of it, he's got the measure of it. But yeah, we're having a lot of fun doing that. That's a bit of insanity with some more modern faces that people recognise.
Bite-sized bat-shittery.
And prior to that, we had a side project on Booking the Tankatory, where we watched every match that legitimately the hardest man that ever lived, one David Tank Abbott, ever had in wrestling. And if you go to the Twitter for that, that's still active, at UTT Tank, you can get some hashtag tank facts.
And I've been previously saying it's because we will never let them die. But it's also because we're not even halfway through all of them.
No, not at all. Tank Abbott doesn't use Google to answer questions. Tank Abbott already knows the answer.
Google uses Tank Abbott for answers.
Exactly, yeah. It's if you type Tank Abbott into Google, it explodes.
That used to be a Google whack. That's a Google explosion.
Yeah. They say that sharks keep moving or they'll die. The real reason is that they're trying to avoid Tank Abbott.
Yeah, Tank Abbott's blood is the only blood that sharks smell and immediately makes them swallow themselves.
And medical science donated its body to Tank Abbott.
Because he wanted a snack.
We're going to be concentrating on the Unstacking the Territory and the Unputting the Territory for the moment. We may well be back in the future looking at more first and lasts of wrestling. But in the meantime,
thank you for listening.